Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. And where are we reading from? 1710, okay. Sutta Vacha Atma Ramas Chamunayo Nirgranta apyurukrame Kurvantya hoi tukim bhaktim Ittam bhuta guno harihi
Sutta uvacha
Atma ramas chamunayo Nirgranta apyurukrame Kurvantya hoi tukim bhaktim Itam bhuta guno harihi Sutta uvacha
Sutta Goswami said
Atma Ramaha.
Those who take pleasure in Atma,
generally spirit soul.
Cha.
Also,
Munayaha.
Sages.
Nirgrantaha.
Freed from all bondage. Api,
in spite of
Urukrame,
unto the great adventurer,
Kurvanti,
do
Ahoy Tukim,
unalloyed
Bhaktim,
devotional service,
Itam Bhuta,
such wonderful,
Gunaha,
qualities,
Harihi,
of the Lord. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. All different varieties of Atma Ramas, those who take pleasure in the Atma or Spirit Self, especially those established on the path of self-realization, though freed from all kinds of material bondage, desire to render unalloyed devotional service unto the personality of Godhead. This means that the Lord possesses transcendental qualities and therefore can attract everyone, including liberated souls. Purport. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained this Atma Rama Shloka very vividly before his chief devotee Srila Sanatana Goswami. He points out 11 features in the shloka, namely 1. Atma Rama, 2. Munayaha, 3. Nirgranta, 4. Api, 5. Cha, 6. Urukrama, 7. Kurvanti, 8. Ahoy Tukim, 9. Bhaktim, 10. Ittam Bhuta Gunaha, and 11. Harihi. According to the Vishva Prakasha Sanskrit Dictionary, there are 7 synonyms for the word Atmarama, which are as follows. 1. Brahman, the absolute truth. 2. Body. 3. Mind. 4. Endeavor. 5. Endurance. 6. Intelligence. And 7. Personal habits. This is a very complex purport. We would have to take a month to discuss it properly. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, on two occasions, explained this one verse of the Bhagavatam, which is a pivotal verse, because the doubt in Parikshit's mind, and rather Shaunaka Rishi's mind, is why did Shukadeva Goswami take the trouble to study this book? He never read any books. Nirgrantha means, again, there's I don't know how many meanings of Nirgrantha pointed out by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Obvious meaning is no books. Somebody who doesn't read books. Nowadays, many people don't read books. They watch television instead, or surf the internet. They don't bother to pick up a book. Shukadeva Goswami, for other reasons, not because he can only tolerate a 3-second sound bite, did he refuse to pick up books. Because he was absorbed in the absolute truth so perfectly that he had no interest in anything material. So yesterday we went to bookstore Gangaram. Gangaram's book bureau, big bookstore. But most of the books are on mundane topics. Shukadeva Goswami would not be interested in visiting that bookstore. Although he would maybe find a copy of Srimad Bhagavatam. And that would be the only book he'd be interested in. Why that book? He's not interested in any other book. Because the Bhagavatam describes the all-attractive qualities of Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Not some other Bhagavan, not some bogus yogi Bhagavan, or even some great sage Bhagavan, or not Bhagavati, there's also the Devi Bhagavat Purana, not Durga Devi either. Swayam Bhagavan, the original personality of Godhead, whom the Bhagavatam identifies as Krishna. Because Krishna is glorified throughout the Bhagavatam, although he's not in the picture through most of the Bhagavatam. We see Krishna in the first canto. Not yet. In a few verses we'll start seeing him. Right after this and the next verse, Suta Goswami changes the topic. He says, now let me tell you about what happened to the Pandavas after the Kurukshetra War. Why? Because, first of all, it involves Krishna. Krishna will appear for us in this chapter and through chapter 11, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Introduction to Krishna consciousness, to seeing and hearing about who Krishna is and what he was like. But to make it interesting, it starts from the end. From the end, the very end of Krishna's pastimes. Krishna is about to depart from this world. And the devotees, his close devotees, have a sense that the pastimes are about to finish. So there's anxiety in the air. There's different kinds of separation. Different kinds of pains of separation. One of them is when you're not separated yet, but you're anticipating it. Just like at the very end of the 10th canto, there are the very nice songs sung by the queens of Dwarka. And they're expressing very intense feelings of separation from Krishna. But Krishna is lying in bed, this is at the end of the night, in his palace, in the same bedroom as the queens. He's right there with them. And they're lamenting in separation. Because that is how intense their love is.
is they're feeling separation from Krishna in anticipation he might go away, even when he's there. So that is the mood that we're going to encounter, expressed by the devotees in the next five chapters of Srimad Bhagavatam. Krishna is about to leave this world, and the devotees are already feeling pain of his separation. And also, this introduces the topic of how Srimad Bhagavatam appeared in this world, how it appeared for us. It exists eternally. Vyasadeva heard it from Narada. Vyasadeva spoke it to his son and disciple Shukadeva. But we weren't there. It wasn't written down. You know, it wasn't recorded. There wasn't a transcription in the daily newspaper discussing the Srimad Bhagavatam. But later, when Shukadeva spoke it to Parikshit, Suta Goswami was present. He spoke it a few years later at Naimisharanya. And then it was remembered. We have that version of the Bhagavatam. That hearing of the Bhagavatam, that speaking by Suta Goswami, that has been recorded, and that is the Bhagavatam that we know. Spoken by Shukadeva, repeated by Suta Goswami. So, how that event of, first of all, Parikshit speaking to Shukadeva speaking to Parikshit, how did that come about? So we hear, after hearing about how Krishna arranged for his pastimes to be finished, and the Pandavas, seeing that Krishna was leaving this world, they also decided there's no reason to stay here, and the Pandavas retire timely. They leave the material world. Then Parikshit Maharaj, the final remaining heir to the Kuru dynasty, is established on the throne by Yudhishthira before he leaves, and he becomes the king. So the story of how Parikshit defeated Kali Yuga, and then how he became cursed by the son of Shamika Rishi, this is the introduction to the appearance of Srimad Bhagavatam. Because Parikshit was cursed, therefore he sat down, Payopavishta Gangayam Parito Paramarshibihi, sat down on the banks of the Ganga, surrounded by all the greatest rishis of the universe. If you count the list of who appears, 26 of the biggest rishis in the universe appeared even before Shukadeva was there. Nobody announced. Again, there was no newspaper advertisement. You know, that Bhagavatam is going to be spoken this afternoon by Shukadeva Goswami on the banks of the Ganga. No. The sages somehow, by their mystic perception, knew it was going to happen. And they assembled on the scene to be with Parikshit Maharaj for the last week of his life. So the greatest sages, Narada, Vyas, Lord Parashuram, and their disciples, many great sages, Agastya, Gautama, many great sages, 26 major sages named, others who were not named, were all present there. Because they were anticipating Shukadeva is going to come, and this all-glorious Bhagavatam is going to be recited to Parikshit, the ideal hearer. And this will help transform the unfortunate condition of Kali Yuga. This will change the world. Kings think that by conquering some kingdom they will change the world, but nothing changes. In the 12th canto in the 4th chapter, Bhumi Devi is laughing. She's humorously considering how all these kings are trying to conquer me. And they march this direction and that direction. And the borders move back and forth and nothing changes. And all these great conquerors, these emperors and kings, they're just names in the list of history. Nothing has actually changed or been accomplished. Just conquering territory and changing the lines on the map do not change the world.
but the spiritual revolution that is created by the hearing and speaking and the living of the principles of Srimad Bhagavatam, that actually changes everything. This one book has the potency to transform the world. If you have any anxiety that the world needs to be changed, that it needs to be fixed, this is the solution. You won't find the solution in politics. You won't find it, you know, in semiconductor technology. You won't find it in anything else, in Srimad Bhagavatam. Use your politics, use your technology to promote Srimad Bhagavatam. Then you'll accomplish something. So Shukadev Goswami, why was he attracted? He's not interested in this material world at all. Ittam Bhuta Guno Harihi. The qualities of Lord Hari are so attractive that even the great sages who are perfectly satisfied just to meditate on the Supreme, they don't need anything from the outside world. They don't need any form of sense gratification. They don't need anybody's praise. They don't need any position in society. They don't care. But they do care about Krishna consciousness. They're attracted. For their own satisfaction, the qualities of the Supreme Lord are so attractive. And hearing about, meditating, and remembering these qualities and activities of the Lord give satisfaction to the self. As Sutta himself said a few chapters before, Savai pum sam puru dharmo yato bhaktir hokshaje ohoi tuki apratiyata yayatma supersedati. That is the highest religion for man. Whatever will help you remember Krishna, whatever leads you to develop pure devotion for the Supreme Lord, do that. That's your highest religion, whatever that may be. Because, yayatma supersedati, by developing love and attraction for Krishna, the heart, your heart will become fully satisfied in a way you cannot even imagine. So Shukadeva and other great sages like the Kumaras are attracted to the pleasure of Krishna consciousness. They put aside their Brahmananda as useless, insignificant in comparison, and dive deeply into the ocean of the nectar of devotion.
Thank you.
And also, these sages, those who are the most advanced, they feel great compassion for us, the fallen conditioned souls. As Prahlad Maharaj said, Naivo dvijay paraduratyaya vaitaranyas tvadvirya gaya namahamrita magna cheta. So, Prahlad said, I'm not afraid of this material world. I'm not an anxiety for myself. Even the material energy is so strong. Even though the material energy has the power to influence any living entity, any jiva soul. Maya is much bigger than all of us. So no one is such a big sage and such a great mystic yogi that he can ignore Maya. Everyone should be afraid of Maya. And it's those who are afraid of Maya that avoid her temptation. Those who think they're not in danger, they're the ones who fall. But Prahlad says, I'm not afraid of your Maya, not because of my strength, but because I'm feeling such great pleasure and satisfaction in always chanting your glories. I don't see how Maya can disturb me. I cannot be distracted from the pleasure of Krishna consciousness. So I'm not afraid, I'm not in anxiety, worried about myself. Shochetato, but I am lamenting. For the condition of the foolish inhabitants of this world who are chasing after illusion and suffering, frustration, and misery. I cannot be satisfied just watching them suffer. I will not even accept liberation for myself unless I can deliver these fallen conditioned souls. So that is also the attitude of an Atmarama. He's attracted to the Bhagavatam because the Bhagavatam evokes his own Krishna consciousness, and from that he derives great pleasure, even if he was already enjoying the pleasure of impersonal contact with the Supreme. This is far greater. Param Krishna Nivartate. You may be, think you're enjoying, but when you get something better, you give up the inferior thing.
No.
You may have some car that barely runs. You're satisfied with it. But if you get a better car, then you're more happy. See, obtaining something better, you lose your interest in the inferior thing. So the great sages lose their interest in impersonal realization when they're able to understand the value and the pleasure of Krishna consciousness. Sukadeva Goswami, therefore, wanted to study Srimad Bhagavatam for his own pleasure, and because he could then carry out his mission in life to be the speaker of Srimad Bhagavatam when the hearer was going to be Parikshit Maharaj. Because this conversation is what we remember as the foundation of Srimad Bhagavatam. Even previous ages, it's remembered. Because Shastra exists eternally. It's not that it just came into being even 5,000 years ago. So Gautama Rishi was advising Ambarish Maharaj. I forget which Purana this is in. Matsya Purana, maybe. Recorded by Srila Jiva Goswami in his Tattva Sandarbha. Ambarish is advised by Gautama Rishi. I advise you want to become free, yet ichyasi bhavakshayam. If you want that your material life be finished, if you've had enough of a material life, I advise that you simply listen to Srimad Bhagavatam as it was spoken by Shukadeva Goswami. Shrinushva shuka proktam. Yadichyasi bhavakshayam. If you want to get out of this world. So, that Bhagavatam as spoken by Shukadev, Srimad Bhagavatam, that is understood to be the means by which all the conditioned souls can be delivered. So the sages, for their own pleasure and also for the salvation of the conditioned souls, they take the trouble to study Srimad Bhagavatam and to preach Srimad Bhagavatam all over the universe. This book is special. There are many Puranas. There are also the Upanishads, other Shastras. Those qualified Brahmins who can do it, they study the original Vedas. But Srimad Bhagavatam is special. Nigama kalpa taror ghalitam palam. Shukumukar amrita dravva samutam. Pipata bhagavatam rasam alayam mohur aho rasika bhuvi bhavukaha. This Srimad Bhagavatam is golitam palam. So, a fruit, when it is ripe, it is sweet and it is soft. Practically pre-digested. A fruit that is pakka is hard and it is difficult to digest. But a fruit that is ripe is very easy to digest. In 20 minutes, you can take your body can digest it. And then you can eat something else. Not advised in the Ayurveda that you eat vegetables and fruit at the same time. But at least you separate by 20 minutes. The fruit can be digested. In 20 minutes, then you can eat a full meal. Galitam palam. Ripe, softened fruit. This is the ripened fruit of the Vedic desire tree. Nigama means the original Shruti, the Vedas, the eternal Shastra that no person has written. Veda, the authority of the Veda, is perfect. It is not based on anybody's opinion. It is not any person's composition. Aparusheya. The Vedas have no... Aparusheya means impersonal, but the idea is nobody is the author of the Vedas. But isn't Krishna the author of the Vedas? Doesn't he say that in the Gita? No, he doesn't say that. Krishna says in the 15th chapter, Vedaischa sarvair, ahameva vedya. I am known by all the Vedas. Vedantakrit, I am the author of the Vedanta Sutra. Vedavit, and I am the knower of the Vedas. He doesn't say he's the author of the Vedas. Even Krishna doesn't say that. Because they were never written, not even by Krishna. When were the jivas created? When? At the beginning of creation? No. They exist eternally. The jiva souls are co-eternal with God. Nobody ever created them, not even God. They expand from him, but they expand eternally. There's never a time when they did not exist. Same way, there is no time when the Vedas were written. They were never written down, they always existed. So nobody wrote the Vedas, not even Krishna, not even God. He doesn't say he's the author. They exist co-eternally with him. The four Vedas are standing by the throne of Lord Narayan in Vaikuntha. So they are eternal. The Vedas expand into the vast Vedic literature. Just like a tree grows from its roots, it grows up the branches. The small branches reach up, the leaves come, and the leaves gather the light of the sun. And from that, by photosynthesis, they produce the tree's food. The tree lives by simply the light of the sun, and it creates its own food. And it breathes in the carbon dioxide that is the waste product of our breathing, and emit as their waste product oxygen. So we depend on oxygen, but we're using up the oxygen and putting out carbon dioxide, which is poison for us. Or at least we can't breathe just carbon dioxide. Thanks to the trees and the plants, they convert the carbon dioxide back to oxygen, and life goes on nicely. Unless we cut down all the trees. Now, the balance must be maintained. So the Vedas expand like a tree. The leaves are there, the branches are there, and then the fruit is there. A pious tree produces an edible fruit, mango tree, coconut tree. A less pious tree doesn't give fruit, it just gives some shade. That's not the second class tree. It is less pious. And an impious tree just has thorns and stickers. You know, it's just a botheration. And better you just cut it down and get rid of it. But the Vedas are the most auspicious tree. Tree is like an organism, a living being with parts, like any living body. Organic whole. The entire Vedic literature, although it can be analyzed by mundane scholars as consisting of different books written at different times by different authors, that is a superficial view. From that view, there's no real connection between the Vedas and the Puranas. And where does the Bhagavatam fit in? It's just something that was written. They speculate when it was written. Maybe the 13th century. Maybe it was written in Tamil Nadu. Because, you know, it must have had a Tamil author. This is a speculation. The Bhagavatam must have been written by a Tamil author. Because the Gopi Gita is written in a verse form, where the first and second word of each, the word of the first line, first word, and the first word of the second line are the same word. And that only exists, that only occurs in Tamil poetry. So Bhagavatam must have been written by a Tamil author, and it must have been written after the 13th century,
Because it mentions fountain pens. I don't know where the Bhagavatam mentions fountain pens, but this is seriously discussed by some scholar. Bhagavatam is written by a Tamil author, and it was written after the 13th century AD. Because it mentions fountain pens. Okay, the Bhagavatam also mentions airplanes. So it must have been written after 1901. These are all speculations. Actually, it is not that these books, the Vedas, the Upanishads, Puranas, Dharma, it's not that they're just separate books written by different people who had no connection with one another, who lived in different ages. That Brahminical, Vedic culture was very ancient. It was one type of civilization. And the Brahminical civilization in the Middle Ages was a totally different thing. No. Actually, the Vedic literature and the Vedic culture is a unified whole. It's like an organism. An organism which has different parts that serve different functions. And they may appear at different times. Just like my wisdom teeth may not appear until I'm 25 years old. But still, my whole body is one organic whole. There's one living being inhabiting that body and one intelligence. Some parts of my bodies may not develop until I'm mature, but it's all one body. So forget the superficial factor, not forget it, but put it in perspective, that apparently some parts of the Vedas are older than others. It's the natural development, the natural manifestation of an organic living being, an organic whole, a tree, the tree of the Vedas. And the ripened fruit is Srimad Bhagavatam, the culmination of all Vedic knowledge. Don't believe it when they tell you that Bhagavatam has nothing to do with the Vedas. Don't believe them if they tell you that the fruit of the mango tree has nothing to do with the roots and the branches. It's all one living being. And the Vedas are all expressions of one divine intelligence. There are rishis and others may be superficially the authors or the compilers of different parts of the Vedas, but is actually the manifestation of the intelligence of the Supreme. Or as the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad tells us, Mahabhutasya nishvasitam etad yad rigvedo yajurveda samaveda atarvana, and so on. All the Vedic Shastras comprise the breathing of the Supreme Being. When Mahavishnu breathes in and out, the universes come. And within that breath are included the eternal Vedas manifest in this world from the breathing, the same breathing of Mahavishnu that creates the universes themselves. With that, in that breath, just like when you breathe, when you want to speak something, that breath is manifested, your voice is manifested through your breathing. If you can't breathe, you can't speak. And when you speak, it's coming out, the sound vibration is coming through your breathing. No? So when the Absolute Truth speaks the Vedas, they come out through his breathing. That is not the creation, just the manifestation of the Vedas at the beginning of the universe. The Vedas are eternal. And not only the Rig Veda, Sama Veda. There are some... There's... not the Brahma Samaj. Arya Samaj. They insist that only the Vedic Samhitas are authentic. And forget the Puranas, they're of no importance. They're only Smriti. But no! All of this is coming from the breath of the Supreme Being. It is all expression of the same divine intelligence, all the authentic Vedic literatures. And especially if we take the ripened fruit. I mean, you can take from a mango tree the bark, and maybe there's some medical use for it. But you're not going to make a mango shake out of the bark of a mango tree, or the roots. You'll take the ripened fruit. And if you take the green fruit, the pucker fruit, you can't do the same thing with it. You can make some use of it. You can make
you know, a drink for the summer out of green mangoes, but it doesn't serve the same purpose as the ripened mango. Our business is to take the ripened fruit of the tree. Let the doctors figure out what to do with the barks and the root of the mango tree. The specialists in medical and pharmacology can figure out what to do with all the parts of the tree. We're interested in the ripened fruit. If we study the Vedic literature, we should do it all from the viewpoint of Srimad Bhagavatam. We get our whole idea of what is real, reality, from the vision of Srimad Bhagavatam. Having imbibed the vision of Srimad Bhagavatam, then we can study Mahabharata. Then we can study other Puranas. And if we want to, we can study the Rig Veda. But we'll see it from the perspective of the Bhagavatam. Otherwise, we'll just be confused reading all these different literatures. So our focus, our world view is fixed by the vision of Srimad Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam is teaching us what is real and what are the proper perspectives of life, what is important, what is of value, what should be the aim of our life. This is all explained to us, for us, in Srimad Bhagavatam. Just like a child learns from the parents, and then from the school, and from his religious leaders, and unfortunately nowadays from the television and the advertisements he sees in the billboards. What is important in life? It is the duty of the parents to give the first spiritual education to their child before they're old enough to go to school. By the time a boy or a girl is 5 years old, the mind is already becoming fixed. If the proper ideas, proper attitudes have not been instilled in a child by the time they're five, then they're spoiled already. So if you just let your children be indoctrinated by the television and other materialistic advertisement, they'll become bad. It's the responsibility of the parents to give spiritual education to the children from the beginning of life, to let them know what are the real values of life. And then send them to good schools, to schools that will give them spiritual education. And make sure that they come in contact with saintly devotees who can give them guidance. Then they'll become valuable citizens, Vaishnavas. So we have to be careful. Especially people from India go to the West and they get practically no chance to train their children up properly. You know? And they go to the Western materialistic schools, they watch the television. These things will spoil the children. So be very careful with your children that they get proper exposure to spiritual culture and try that you minimize their exposure to materialistic life. It's not that, oh, this is our culture, you know, this is the modern world, we can't deprive our children. For their own good, we should deprive them of materialism. They don't need it. Nobody needs it. Anyway, this is Bhagavatam culture. Culture, radical culture, spiritual culture. Bhagavatam does not compromise. Srimad Bhagavatam does not encourage any form of materialism. Doesn't tolerate it. So we're followers of Srimad Bhagavatam. We also have to be radical. We're living in this world, but we have to live in a special way. Avoiding this materialistic demoniac civilization. We have to transform it, not be transformed by it. Sukadeva Swami didn't want to come into this world because he didn't want to participate in the materialistic civilization. He agreed for one reason only, to hear and then speak Srimad Bhagavatam. And that should be our prime reason also. You know, we agree, we accept, we will tolerate being in this materialistic world, because we can do service to the mission of Srimad Bhagavatam. Otherwise, better get out of here as soon as possible. Itam Bhuta Guno Hari. Okay, just a minute. The qualities... Come on, you're pulling the wires up. The quality... I'm going to be done in a minute. The qualities of the personality of Godhead are so attractive that even the greatest sages who are completely indifferent to everything of this world are helplessly attracted. So also, Prabhupada explains in the purport that I haven't taken the time to read here, that Atmarama also means people who take pleasure in materialism. Also, the materialists are called Atmaramas, because Atma can mean body. So people who take pleasure in bodily comforts, that's another meaning of Atmarama. Even they cannot help but be attracted to Krishna. So give them this. Show mercy to these materialistic people. Give them Srimad Bhagavatam. Somehow or other, give them prasadam. Give them your personal association. Give them these books. Because it can change this world. It can change their lives. That's our responsibility as devotees of Srimad Bhagavatam, to imbibe this spirit, to live it, to make a radical commitment to a different kind of life, and to try to give this in whatever form people will take it, to give it to everybody. Okay, so I'll stop here. Are there any questions or comments? Yes, Prabhu.
This Prabhu was saying that the only way you can solve the problems in the existing world is to implement the Bhagavatam, principles of Srimad Bhagavatam and politics.
Yes.
Governing the world.
Well, if you are going to get involved in politics, then do it for the purpose of introducing Srimad Bhagavatam. Use political influence to preach Srimad Bhagavatam. I'm not saying that we should get involved in politics, but if we have that inclination, if we want to do that, then do it for that purpose. Most devotees are better off not getting involved in politics.
Actually, the question is, if you see the subject matter of Bhagavatam, it is more enjoyed by the Atmaramas or the devotees who don't have any interest in material civilization or material growth. But when you run a nation or an economy, you can't expect all the people of that sort to require a lot of material growth and economic growth.
People require... Stay away from the wire square. People require their material needs to be fulfilled. And some people who are motivated by, you know, mercantile kind of attitude, they need to do business. That's their, you know, that's natural. If you deprive that person, you know, the opportunity to fulfill his propensities, he's going to be unhappy. So let the businessmen do business, let the rulers rule, and let the intellectuals do their studying and teaching. Let everybody do their natural duty. But center it around Krishna conscious culture. It's not that these material things should stop, but they should all be used for the glorification of Krishna. Some devotees can become experts in studying and teaching Srimad Bhagavatam. You know, actually read the book, even read it in the original Sanskrit, read the commentaries, become very expert, and become very expert in presenting it. That's Brahminical specialty. Other devotees can organize the spreading of this knowledge. They may not be experts in the techniques of the knowledge itself, but they can organize the distribution of it. And so on. And the common people who are not intellectually inclined, who won't pick up a book, still the culture can be introduced in many forms. In India, until recent generations, the whole culture was based on the knowledge of Mahabharata and Ramayana. The whole, you know, everybody's, practically now even, many people, their names are names of characters in the Mahabharata and Ramayana, either gods or devotees. So the Indian culture is permeated by that literature, just like the Western culture is permeated by the biblical literature. So we can introduce Srimad Bhagavatam culture, and it can be a popular culture. The stories and the characters of Srimad Bhagavatam are very attractive. And even common people who have no philosophical or literary interest, still they'll be attracted. Somebody will read the book, and someone who doesn't read can hear. Television can be used, internet can be used, all these media and technology can be used for spreading the culture, popular culture of Srimad Bhagavatam. Now, why should the popular culture just be cricket players and Michael Jackson and whatever. You know, why not something of value, of the highest value? People want to be entertained, but we can give them, you know, entertainment of good value.
But does it not contradict the object of the profession what you do? Does not contradict the object of the profession what you do?
How is that?
Like, Bhagavatam speaks mostly about coming out of materialistic way of life, and it speaks about liberation, it speaks about getting self-realized.
Bhagavatam talks about liberation, but the concept of liberation, nirbandhak Krishna sambandhi, to become detached by attaching everything to Krishna. So the higher principle, the important principle, is connecting everything with Krishna. So connect the politics and the business with Krishna. Then it can go on. It can prosper. We can earn crores for Krishna and spend them for Krishna. We can conquer kingdoms for Krishna. So there's plenty of scope for politics, business, and everything else. But for the purpose of Krishna. Look at the Mahabharata and the history of the Pandavas. They were involved in big-time politics, but it was all for the glory of Krishna. And there are histories of businessmen also, who were businessmen for Krishna. It's a matter of not just negating, not a matter of negating artificially, but of transforming everything by connecting it with Krishna's service. That's all. Okay, anything else? Okay, thank you. All glory to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.